This is my fifth time recording the intro. There's just too many details to keep straight, and I'm trying to get through all of it in a logical, reasonable way. Let's start off with my guest today. His name is Craig Crawford. This is his return episode. The first time he was with me, I had my podcast co-host, Christopher Talon, with me, and we told a fun story about sharks. This was during a time when TRBM was exploring if it wanted to reinvent itself. It ultimately went back to basically what it had been, but it was a fun little break, and so I don't know if all of you enjoyed the story episodes, but yeah, that was fun, and Craig was a guest at the story episode period of this podcast. He's back to talk about last Monday's episode, which irked him. He was irked, and I think reasonably so, fairly so. He was irked because I told writers to just go ahead and quit already. Now, here's the deal. I still stand by that episode. I hope if you listen to it, some of you do as well. And I hope others of you were as peeved as Craig was. It's fun to have this debate. And so Craig joined me here after we had a little bit of a correspondence based on last week's episode. And I thought, you know what? We need to capture this debate for listeners because I have a radical perspective. And I think that authors who aren't going to go all in and give it their best and really try hard might as well not waste their life. Craig feels like you can't tell people that, and that people's journey sometimes leads them to a place where they might be willing to do something that they wouldn't have done when they heard an episode like that. And it's not my business to tell them to quit. I really respect that point of view, even though I disagree with it. So that is why this is such a charged and fun episode. You're going to hear Craig make a great defense of why we need to support authors in their journey, no matter where they're at or what they think they're going to do. And he really does have some great perspective on why that's a good idea. Now, here's the deal. We had some internet connectivity issues. And when I say we, I mean me. I live in a small town. American Broadband / Fastwire, whatever it's called, just completely kerputzed on us. And even though I was able to get back on the hook with Craig and finish up the conversation, unfortunately, when I went to edit it, the recordings didn't sync up. And so it sounded like I kept interrupting Craig, and that Craig was really, really excited to answer questions I hadn't quite asked. No matter how much fiddling I did with trying to get the two tracks aligned, I could not do it. And I decided that that was okay because the first half of the conversation was where all the good stuff was. Therefore, I'm bringing to you a somewhat abrupt ending to this conversation. Craig's going to make a great point, and then we're just going to be done. We'll go into the closing credits, the closing music, the call to action to rate and review this podcast, all that good stuff. And it is a rather brief episode compared to some that you'll listen to, especially in the interview format, but really, truly, meat and potatoes here, folks, all the good stuff. Now, moving on to the final aspect, you're pretty used to hearing an ad for AMMO, Author Marketing Mastery Through Optimization, when you listen to my podcast. Maybe you've checked it out before, maybe you haven't. You may have listened to the episode with Steve Piper, founder of AMMO, just 2 weeks ago, and checked the program out for the first time, or maybe you're thinking about it. Well, here's the cool thing. I'm dropping the old ad because the new version 4 of AMMO is a little bit different, and so I need to put together an ad that more reflects what AMMO is today to authors of all stages. But here is my brief description of what it is. You can find a link to it in the show notes and learn more from Steve's program description. So you just want to click in the show notes, learn more. There's going to be two options in there, one for Substack that's a nice little green button, and one that's just a link that's underlined, learn more. Click that to find out about Author Marketing Mastery Through Optimization. But in short, what Steve has done is he has created a program that is great for learning how to click test on Facebook. It's going to make you a ninja at advertising on Facebook. It's unlike any other program out there. Yes, it takes work. Yes, it's tough, but it's amazing. Check it out. Click the link in the show notes to learn more. With all the love in the world, I'm sending you now to this fantastic debate with my friend and fellow author, Craig Crawford.
This is TRBM AMMO Edition. If you're a published author and want to make a living writing books and selling them to avid readers, you've come to the right place. There's simply no program that's more successful at driving readers towards the books you've written. So the only thing you have to worry about is writing a great book. And the system with an AMMO takes care of the rest. Thanks for listening to this conversation.
I don't think a lot of writers understand this new landscape. They're still under that old model of, all I need to do is get a publisher and then everything's cake. And that is not the way it is anymore.
I like where you're going too, because I want to spend the most time we can having this conversation. And so I'm just going to frame it up for the listener.
Sure.
You and I started going back and forth, corresponding through the comments on my podcast episode from last Monday. And I don't remember exactly the title, but essentially I encouraged people to just go ahead and quit. I encouraged writers to just throw in the towel and be done with this if they don't think that they want to make it a big thing. And so in this conversation, we decided we would take those correspondence and start talking it through. And I think it's important to front load this by saying I'm going to probably be more blunt in this conversation than I might actually be in reality for the sake of having the back and forth. And so I invite Craig to be a little bit more blunt as well on his side. The reason I feel really safe doing this is because I know the kind of person that Craig is, and I know he's not going to get angry at me if I say some insensitive things. And he knows that I'm not going to disrespect him for feeling a little bit differently about the situation. So we're just going to see if we can have some fun being contrary to each other for this episode and talk about writing. So with that said, I'm going to again plant my flag and say that it is my belief at this time in life that there are people right now who are writing and making claims like I would be satisfied if my book was just one person's favorite book. I don't believe that. I believe that person is self-deceptive and that they might as well just quit if that's their only goal because it's too small. And that probably pretty well sums up my position. So Craig, you had a different feeling about it, and I want to give you an opportunity to kind of like plant your first flag and where you stand in this conversation.
It was funny because I saw the headline and I was like, oh, I was wondering where you were going to go with it. And then I listened to it and it just kind of stuck with me strong enough that I was like, no, I just can't let this pass because I get what you're saying because I understand this landscape that we're in, like, you know, but at the same time, it's not my call. And I don't think it's your call. I started writing because I've just always been a storyteller. When I was a kid, I had toys and I created stories around cars or action figures. And then I got to junior high and it escalated to actually reading like fantasy and science fiction. And then it progressed to like role-playing games. And I preferred running the story as opposed to playing a character. And so all through that, but I think you're looking at it from too small of a place because even in my own life, my writing hasn't always been at the forefront. For a long time, it was just kind of percolating in there and I was trying to figure out my path to get to this and stuff. And so, yeah, I think you got your one person. I know a couple of people that write and they've put stuff up on Amazon and, you know, they're sort of half serious, but they're not quite yet. But to me, writing still fulfills something and it serves a purpose beyond just the big, you know, bottom line, the dollar amount or the sales amount or the fan base or that stuff. So that's where I come back on you and say, no, I think that's too easy of an out.
Easy. Interesting. I see my call as being the harder stance of the two because I am asking people to be serious about their pursuits. And so what I would say to you is that I believe like I said, I'm going to be blunt. I believe that hobbies are a waste of time and that they are killing you and that they are ruining your quality of life. And so I believe that you said something, writing is serving a purpose in your life. And I get that.
Yeah.
I understand the long game, and I'm not in this for the short game. So I want to be clear on that. But if it's writing that is important and not necessarily publishing or building the fan base or having a conversation around your work, to me, that's a different thing than what I'm talking about. And it's okay if you want to publish it just because you're like, okay, now that's out there and, you know, luck could strike.
Sure.
But I cannot divorce the writing of fiction from the consumption of the population. To me, they're not separable. You can't tear them apart. And so you have to be in or you have to be out. And then it's a journal. And any way that you choose to journal is your business. That's how I feel about it.
I got you. Yeah. And like I said, I guess I think there are different stages to this. And I feel like I said, I think, I don't know. I guess I just still just disagree with that. I think it's, yeah. I understand what you're saying. If you're going to be a business about this, you got to be a business about this. But I also think there's different levels of it. And I think there's different paths along this. And I think sometimes you got to kind of find your way. The one thing I was thinking about the other day leading up to this is, I think you and I are not the norm when it comes to writers because we are very extroverted. And I think a lot of writers are very introverted. And I think in the old publishing model, that worked because they would get a story sold or a book, and then the publisher would take care of all the nonsense. They might have to, you know, show up for book signings and stuff, but they didn't really have to take on all these other pieces. And now all that's gone and all that's changed. And even everything I hear from the big five, they're sloughing off more and more onto their authors too. So what's the point? But, and that's my little dig against the big five today. But,
yeah.
But so I think the introverts, and I know several introvert writers, and it's almost like they can't tackle it the same way you would or I would, because I don't think they're capable of jumping in full bore all at once. They got to kind of ease into the water. They got to write the book. They got to get it up on Amazon. They got to jump through, and then they slowly just kind of keep progressing. And to me, that's fine. That's their journey. It's
That's the long game.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, to me, I see that as the long game, and I understand that. I was thinking, my dog walks all sort of blend into one constant conversation. It's a really cool meditative practice, actually. Every morning, I take my dog out for a walk. I've been adding some sprinting and for a little bit of exercise, but generally speaking, walking is the perfect pace to think and percolate. And so I don't remember exactly which day this was, but I was thinking recently about the long game and how I spent a good deal of time just honing my craft. And during that time, I was of the mind that if I wrote a good enough book, the rest would take care of itself. I really wholeheartedly believe that. And so in many ways, I believed that The Nine Lives of Marvita Longhi for me was that book that both disabused me of a false notion and gave me the catalyst, or was the catalyst, to change the way that I was doing things. And so one thing I want to point out is that I am actually an extreme introvert by nature. I am not an extroverted person. I come across extroverted because there was somebody in my life who said, we don't have the luxury of being introverted if we want to be successful at this business. Okay. It goes back to the things that you said about, I'm trying to sort of like rephrase, but it goes back to what you said about getting into the water, I guess. I had to get into the water. And so part of the long game for me was learning how to,
I get you.
Yeah. To be an extrovert. And so that's something I had to do, is accept, like, I can't be me and do what I want to do. I have to be another version of me.
Yeah, I get you. Well, you know, and I had those same delusions as a writer early on too. It's like, you know, you hear the bullshit of, well, you know, only so many people can even write a novel. So, you know, you've already gotten that. And then I wrote my novel. And then, you know, and I'm going to say the first couple of novels I wrote, yeah, I'm sure they're crap. And, you know, they're, you know, the whole first thing you write, it's that process of getting that done first. And then you go back and you start really learning how to use words and with power and stuff. And there were several years I attended a writer's conference in Chicago, and I had multiple things to pitch, and you could pay a few bucks and then actually go sit with honest to God literary agents and pitch your book for 10 minutes, which I did 3 or 4 years. And that kind of was my moment of, well, this is crap, because you'd sit down and I'd sit down at a table and I'd have 10 minutes and I thought I was being fairly smart, because I'd spend about 5 minutes pitching my book, and then I'd spend the rest of the time asking them about their job and what they did in the day, kind of, you know, feel it out from their end too. And I got lots of, at the conference, it was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I want to read this. This sounds really exciting, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. None of it ever panned out. It was always, oh, gee, thanks for sending it, but no, it's not quite right. And after, I think, third or fourth time, I was like, well, this is just a sham. It's you know, it's a shell game of, and they weren't really looking for new stuff. They were just doing it as part of their outreach and their nonsense.
You have to have something that is like, boy. Well, you're directly replying to the part about writing the best book and trusting that the book will get you there. I still believe, and it's really funny, I'm early enough in this process still that I have days where I think I'm deluded about how good The Nine Lives of Marvin DeLonghi is, because people will get angry. They'll be like, oh, this book, the pace is too slow for me, or the language seems flowery, or different things. And I'm like, I get angry because I'm like, have you ever read Raymond Chandler before? Do you know what The Big Sleep sounds like? Because I kicked my own ass to create that hard-boiled tone.
Yeah.
Like, that is how the Dashiell Hammetts and the Chandlers wrote. They wrote this way, and I pained myself to do this. And you have all of this invested into this book, and you put it before somebody like that agent that you're talking about in pitching to all these agents. And what they actually want is like, this is the next Twilight. They don't want you to say that. They want you to figure out how to say it different, but like, that's ultimately what they want. They want something repeatable that's a blockbuster, and everything else is a hard no.
And I'll give you kudos, because I read your book and I'm going to read the others. And I've read enough that 5 pages in, I know when somebody has their voice, has their style, and they're leading me down the road. And you do that very well.
Thank you.
It wasn't, okay, I'm going to read 5 pages to get through this tonight and then move on. It was, I'm curious where this story's going. And I read it page one to end, and I was enthralled, and I was into it. And I was, you know, I'm also the writer. So I'm like, well, I wonder where he's going with this. I wonder if he's going down this road. Nope. And you kept shifting around and doing your thing, and you wrote a really excellent book. And that's, I've read other stuff. It's like, oh my God, do you even know where the hell you're at in this thing? Yeah. Or, you know, or they're on such a crutch of, you know, dialogue is painful, or, you know, exposition is painful and stuff. Yeah. And I do believe in the long game, your writing will rise above to the, at some point, somebody will come around and go, well, shit, this guy knows how to write.
Yeah.
And he tells a good story. But for the short term, I do agree with you. It's like, you gotta go guns, and you've got to put it out there, and you got to keep getting it in front of readers. You got to keep getting it out there until it gets to that certain level of fervor that the people who can do something with it notice it too, or come across it, or one of their friends says, oh my God, I read this book, you got to read this.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So, and I don't know if we're quite on the same plane of, I think I know what you're talking about. And I think, you know, in some respects, I really agree with what you say. It's like, you cannot half-ass this.
Mm-hmm.
you do have to tackle it. You do have to attack it. You do have to, you know, keep running things down. But like I said, for my own part, I think there's a process, a mental process. And I think there's also stages that are internal, and I don't know quite how to explain it, but
yeah. Well, so as you were talking, it dawned on me, because I do oftentimes feel that you and I agree on more than we disagree on. And I would venture to guess that a lot of people probably disagree with some of what I have to say, especially when it comes to the more,
hardline
binary
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The hardline stuff. But what I would ask you, I guess, is it in somebody's best interest to save? Well, no, see, that's a leading question. What I'm getting at is that I want to talk to the people right now who are listening to this podcast episode directly after listening to last Monday's podcast episode. I want to talk to that person and say, if there's not a point in your future, I don't know when that's going to be, if it's 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years down the road, where you are willing to both humble yourself to the incredibly painful work it takes to get a book in front of the masses. And if you're not willing to spend a decade just kicking your own butt to get a book in front of readers, then you might as well quit now, because you don't actually have the dream. You just have the hope of like lightning striking.
Okay.
That's what I want to say to people, is there has to be a day where you draw a line in the sand and say, now it is time. I must treat this like a business. And if you know right now today that you can't do that, then you might as well quit.
Yeah, I get that. And that makes sense too. And yes, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with that, you know, oh, if I just write this really good book,
yeah,
somehow it will get out there on its own, independent. Merit. And
yeah.
Yeah. And it'll happen. And I don't know, maybe that was true at one point way long ago. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But because there were so many fewer writers and there were so few platforms, mm-hmm. that I think there really was a culling of, if you couldn't write for shit, you were never going to get anywhere. Yeah. Well, nowadays, I could just write some piece of crap. I could write anything for a couple hours and throw it up on Amazon. That's not a problem. And the example I used in our comments was that, you know, I had read this horror book. It sounded kind of intriguing. And so I picked it up and it was terrible. And it was, it was awful. And I was like, it's a slippery slope, but I wish somebody had been able to filter that and say, no, that's not going up on Amazon, because you're not ready, and it's not ready, and you're not capable. But at the same time, you know, who do you put in charge of that gate? And once that gate is there, you could potentially weed out, or, you know, kick out people who deserve to be there. But so the best I could do with this guy was say, you know what, that was terrible, but go back to school, take online classes, do whatever, read books, learn how to write appropriately, and then stuff. I say I'm getting off base, but
not necessarily. I think that it's all part of the conversation that we're having. The only fix I can think of for that particular issue is that Amazon should be within their rights to just auto delete a book if it hasn't had any downloads in a certain period of time.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm surprised they're not doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like it would be a good thing to do. They're providing the ISBNs in many, many cases, and especially for the kind of people you're talking about. So they can easily just get rid of that ISBN, or the ASIN in their case. And just say, hey, this book wasn't selling anyways. We're going to save some space on our servers and get rid of it. So that would be one good way to do it. But I do take comfort in knowing that that book, even though you found it and bought it, you are an anomaly. That book's never going to sell. And so it's not as if that person is going to steal a reader from me, because I'm going to bust my ass finding readers.
And with the hope thing too, I do agree with you on that too. It's, you cannot write a book and throw it out there and just say, well, okay, in 5 years, somebody's going to come across it. And because that's, sure, people win lotteries all the time. It happens. Yeah. But for the other 99.999% of us, that ain't how it's going to happen. Right. And you cannot delude yourself that, because I don't know how many, what is it, like 3 million books come up on Amazon every single year kind of thing. I mean, you're up against that wall. And the only way to get beyond that is you got to jump in on your own and you got to start finding ways to market, to advertise.
Yeah.
It now, just is.
This is another area where I'd love to hear from you, your thoughts about it. But there are a lot of writers, and I come into contact with them in various different ways, who like do the same stuff that's not working and get bitter and upset that they're not seeing results. One of the most common ways, I took a flyer on a PR guy. I think I mentioned that in the last episode, but I'd known him. I'd had a few of his clients on my podcast in the past, and saw some kind of like red flags in having those conversations with people. They have no idea how to market. And all of them had some pretty negative comments about their failures and feeling like the market was stacked against them. And it wasn't their fault that they were trying to do things and it wasn't working. Those are the other people that I'm pretty tempted to just be like, you know what, go ahead and quit. Because if you're expecting somebody else to give you success, then you might as well quit right now. It's going to have to be you. You need to recognize today that no one's coming to save you. And the moment that you reconcile that truth, this is my belief. I'm open to you feeling or seeing it differently. But the moment that you accept that no one is coming to save you is the moment you have a chance to actually make something happen.
And I agree with that. It's I think it's part of that bigger delusion. Again, it's in a maybe a smaller way, but it is this like, okay, I'm going to do marketing. And then they do it for a month or two or throw ads up or, you know, and then I hear that too. It's like, well, I tried Amazon ads or I tried Facebook ads and it didn't do anything. Yeah. Well, how long did you do it? Well, 2 months.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that is where the long game comes in. And it's bitter. It's rough. Yep. But you got to do it. I'm talking with a lady who writes, she's over in the UK, I think. And she just put her book out this year. And she was very excited about, which is great and stuff. And then, you know, last week or so, she was like really getting discouraged because it's getting nowhere. And she was starting to try to market, but she didn't do it. And I talked to her a little bit on the side and I said, yeah, this sucks. And I said, or it doesn't suck, but it's not the pretty little, you know, carriage rolling up for the princess.
Yeah.
To carry you off to the castle kind of thing. It's the long game. I'm like, you know, don't get discouraged. Do as many different things as you can. And I was giving her specifics of, you know, press releases and local bookstores. And because I think part of the process too is finding those few things along the way that give you success.
Yeah.
Because it'll bolster your confidence and you're like, well, I sucked at this. But I did do that, and this happened, and I think that's part of it too. And you just got to keep going, and you cannot quit. And that's what I was trying to get across too. It's like, yes, I know for the short term, and I think probably most writers, there's going to be this long heavy of not getting very far, you know, and you have to fight for every inch and every sale and every review. But that's kind of where we're at right now. And that's kind of what it's all about. And I think the best part is if you keep going, you keep doing what you're doing and what I'm starting to do, it's going to win out over all those other people who do quit and do just, you know, or give up after a couple of months. It's perseverance is what it's all about too.
Yeah. There's something interesting. This is really, and it's not exactly on the topic that we're discussing, although probably it's part of it. I've been doing a lot of in-person shows, and so I've solved to some degree my personal way of selling books. It's close to a guarantee as you can get in the authoring world that if I show up in an event, I'm going to sell books. And that's like the only place I can think of where that's true. I cannot guarantee on any given day I'm going to sell one off of Amazon or off of advertising on Facebook. But if I show up at an event, I'm going to sell books. And so far, with the exception of one show that I've gone, no, two shows that I've gone to, I've been profitable at every one. So
that's cool.
It's a great way to do this. Now, with that said, I cannot verify that anybody's actually read the books after they bought them. I don't have any reviews that I can tell came from the shows. Like nobody got on Amazon and was like, I met this guy at such and such a show and read his book and loved it. And so part of it is like, I'm printing these books, I'm making a profit, and the lag between selling them and then people responding, it's like,
right.
I don't know. I mean, yeah.
You know, I think that's a slowly changing landscape too, because I mean, you growing up and especially when I was growing up, you know, there was never feedback.
Right. Ever. Yeah.
Unless you were able to go to someplace, you know, a con or something where your authors were at and you could go get in line and get your book signed and say, I love your stuff. That was your feedback.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, cause I've run up against that too. When the Project Threshold came out last fall, I was contacting friends on Twitter to read. And I was like, you want to, you know, I'll send you the art copy. You read it and you review it. I'll send you books and stuff. And I was hitting that hard. And I still just didn't get that many responses out of things.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, well, that's, you know, I hit that really, really, really hard too. Yeah. And every avenue I could think of. And it's just like, I got some, but it's not people's first inclination to, even if they liked the book, even if they really liked it. I've had people say, oh my God, I love these books. I love this. And still not reviewing them. You know, and so it's like, okay, what do you do with that? I don't know.
Thank you for listening to TRBM. The theme music was provided by the ever-talented Christopher Talon. And hey, if you liked what you heard, share this show with other readers, because what's the point of telling stories if nobody's listening?